Everyone, welcome to the Crypto Wealth Show. Today we are joined by Dr. Kim. He is with Monero. I'm actually not, what is actually your official, are you in any official capacity with Monero? Or?
Yeah, so actually nobody has an official capacity with Monero since it has no official like organizational structure. So I call myself a community volunteer and I just feel strongly about this project and its merits, and I think it's important to humanity, in fact, and so that's why I'm here to help talk about it. Also, the people at Anarchopulco are supportive of this project, and they wanted to. So, when they sent the speaking invite, I said yes.
And one of the things I really liked about your talk is you talked about the real-world applications for Monero, just outside of what people might think might be the obvious case of, hey, this is the preferred currency for drug dealers or terrorists. And you had mentioned that there's actual, you know, legitimate use cases for actual businessmen of why they would want to use this, especially if they are already into crypto. So I wonder if you could elaborate on that for us, please.
Yeah, sure. So we're in a situation now in which the dominant cryptocurrency out there is fully transparent. So the person who sent, the person who received, and the amount that was sent, those are all public and available to everybody to look at. You don't even have to be, you know, you don't have to own any of the cryptocurrency. You just go and you look. So, like, for example, if you told me your Bitcoin address, I could go find out how much money you have. It's frankly a rather creepy situation, especially in the context of the erosions on privacy that are taking place with all the networked databases that there are out there. You have it's not just governments, but you also have kind of incompetent corporations who load up, you know, customer data and then get hacked, right? This happens like every other week now, right?
Equifax.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, so we're in a situation in which participating in a transparent blockchain like that is only adding to your digital footprint that's out there. So let's say that you're a business and you're kind of crypto enlightened, and you choose to do your payroll in crypto, and so every Friday you do the payroll and your employees get paid. Well, because you do this, you know, if you do this on a transparent blockchain, then your employees now can kind of figure out, well, first of all, they see where the money came from. It came from the boss's account. So now they can go on a blockchain explorer, look at the boss's account. Well, first, that's kind of disturbing too in itself. But the fact that other co-employees probably got paid at the same time means that, well, now you have some idea of like how much money was going to all your buddies at work. You know, it's like, it's not even, it's just creepy, right? Another application would be, let's say you're, again, a business that is crypto-friendly. You're paying your suppliers with crypto. You're charging your customers crypto. And now there's a unethical competitor who comes around. They use the fact that you can examine all of the transactions on the blockchain to find out who your customers are. They'll know how much each of your customers paid, because that's the granularity of the data. Right? It's not just like an account that sees what the aggregate sales were. You see every single atomic sale that happened to every single customer and exactly how much they paid and when they paid. Right? And you can also see like where the who your suppliers are, how much money you paid them. Right? So there's all sorts of like negative consequences for a business that loses this data. For example, like, so now an unscrupulous company can come around, look up the customer list and tell them, hey, you know, why don't you switch to us? We'll give you 5% off what you paid. And by the way, we actually know what you paid. So we'll really make it 5% off what you actually paid. You know, it's like suppliers could use the information on their customers to basically shake them down. So let's say the business had a good quarter and you can see that on the transparent blockchain. Well, now you go back to your supplier to get more supplies for the next quarter. And, costs have gone up, you know, sorry, we're going to have to charge you 25% more, right? There's people like to say that they have nothing to hide, but they have something to hide. You know, you don't want people's salaries just being transparent. You don't want a lot of business supply chain issues to be transparent. Another thing that the average Joe has to worry about is being falsely accused or falsely associated with nefarious activity that happened not on their watch. So because there is this complete transparency between who sent who what in a transparent blockchain. You have situations in which people who are completely innocent receive cryptocurrency from somebody, like, let's say, like, I sell my car to somebody, right? And in exchange for giving them my used car, they give me crypto. But unbeknownst to me, the person who gave me the crypto got it in some shady way. So, like, the people looking at the blockchain, they don't know that. All they know is that a bad guy gave me $10,000 of crypto.
And that happened with someone in Iran recently, right?
Well, I probably. I don't know. I'm not familiar with that particular one, but, I mean, they're, like, on Reddit, every week you read about people who get their Coinbase account just shut down with zero explanation, you know, zero recourse, and it's just because they, you know, oftentimes it's because they made a false positive in these probabilistic analysis systems that are being used to gauge the, you know, quote-unquote goodness of people transactioning on the blockchain. So the unfortunate consequence is that transparent blockchains have an effect in that they socialize reputation. Like, people's reputations, they kind of bleed. Like, they follow the money as it goes through the economy. It's just not a good situation. So what Monero does is different. Monero has, just like Bitcoin, it has a distributed blockchain that all of the participants in the network get a copy of. But unlike Bitcoin, you can't just go up to it and look at all the information. So in Monero, if you, as a nobody, as a non-participant in the network, you'll see that blocks happened, you'll see that transactions happened, but you'll see none of the details behind them. And this is synthesized because Monero uses three different technologies to protect the identities of both the sender and the receiver and the amount sent. So it's like a lot. It's not just one little Band-Aid that's getting applied. It's not, oh, let's just take a bunch of coins that people want to mix and mix them up. It's not that. It's deeper than that. This is it's privacy technology, and it's been well thought out. Monero has a research lab that hires full-time PhDs to go to cryptography conferences and, you know, converse with colleagues and you know, think about improvements and think about potential flaws in our current implementation. So it's quite an effort. What you can do in Monero, if you own some Monero, is just like in Bitcoin, there's a private key that you will want to, you know, hold on as a dear personal secret and make sure that nobody else knows, and also make sure that you don't, like, scramble up your personal key so badly that you yourself forget how to get it, which is another way you can, you know, fall off the tightrope, right? So basically, you're walking a tightrope where you have your crypto initially, you want to get to the other side of the tightrope with your money intact. There are two ways you can fall off. One way is that you leak your key, somebody else steals your money. The other is that you forget your key or otherwise, you know, botch it up and forget how you did, or you fail to kind of let your heirs know how to do it in the case of a trust sort of situation. So anyway, in Monero, you also have a private key. And what you can do with the private key, in addition to the ability to spend, just like in Bitcoin, the private key allows you to examine the blockchain, the Monero blockchain. Basically, you use your private key like decoder glasses. Then when you scan through the Monero blockchain, the transactions that you personally were involved in will become apparent. Everybody else's transactions still remain scrambled. So it's just a very common sense way to do the blockchain. It's basically all the transactions that I was involved in, that's my business, I can see it on the blockchain. Everyone else's, it's not my business. I shouldn't be able to see it. You know, it's just creepy that in Bitcoin, if you tell me your Bitcoin address, I can find out how much money you have. I can look up all your history. It's basically like having a dollar bill in which on the back of the dollar bill, there's in neat columns, you know, the identities of every person before you who had the dollar bill. That's Bitcoin. And this, it's hard to do privacy tech. And that's why Bitcoin hasn't done it yet. Like, they make noises about it, but I mean, I think it's part of the social contract of Bitcoin at this point that it's transparent. To connect that back to, like, the beginnings of Bitcoin, right? Like, if you think of Satoshi, Satoshi, when he put out the Bitcoin white paper, was putting together concepts from a number of different fields. There's cryptography, there's game theory in what miners do. There's some economics. There's also the coin emission curve. Like he had to think about distributed computing, right? So like he mashed up a bunch of different things to put this strange brew together that actually succeeded in creating digital scarcity without the need for a central authority to maintain that digital scarcity. So in the early days, the transparency of the blockchain was a requirement, because I'm sure you know, like in the first year and a half of Bitcoin's existence, it had no price. That's because it was just this geek project. You just had a bunch of geeks like downloading this software and this thing called Bitcoin. It's not worth anything, but like it claims to be like act like money, right? So, gee, I'm going to try and hack this thing, and they find that they can't, right? They found that they couldn't, and that's how Bitcoin got its initial value of a fraction of a penny, you know, back in 2011, and that's how it grew. It's basically the due diligence activities of a whole bunch of like unknown geeks. That's what established that this kind of crazy idea in the Bitcoin white paper worked. But in order to get that verification, you had to have radical transparency. Like as geeks, like I had to be able to say, hey, I sent you a Bitcoin and I can see that you got it, so don't be telling me you did, you know, like that kind of thing. It's like everything in the ledger was like clear for everybody. So now fast forward 10 years later, right? Now we're in a world that is in which privacy is just dead. It's dead, right? I mean, it's almost hopeless. Like the people are voluntarily like posting pictures of their lunch on Facebook, you know, and all these databases can easily be linked together to be used for purposes other than which the individual intended them to be used. So now we're in a situation where this transparency of the Bitcoin blockchain, which was a requisite feature to establish its authenticity and like legitimacy, that same transparency is being used against and often against the little guy. It's often the little guy who's just getting caught in the middle, you know, receiving Bitcoins from someone shady they didn't know because they were selling their car for a Bitcoin or something like that, right? So like there are instances like this of kind of like basically injustice, right? And so something like Monero, I think it's much more needed at this point, you know. And another idea is that as Americans, like we have a First Amendment right to free speech. One fun thing about crypto is that it blurs the line between speech and money, right? So knowledge of the private key is itself speech. So it's like the opposite of the Citizens United case, in which money was judged to be a kind of speech. Now with cryptocurrency, speech is a form of money, right? So if speech is a form of money, we ought to have a constitutional right to hold our money in whatever form of speech we want.
It's ones and zeros.
It's ones and zeros.
And actually, thank you for that. And one of the OGs of the movement is Ernest Hancock, who's actually over here to my left. And he has, with Pirates Without Borders, these different categories. One of the very first category is communication. And a lot of people have been, if there's any one criticism of it, they're saying, people are saying, hey, there should be one that says money. And he's actually was saying, no, actually money is a form of communication. So it's actually very fitting that you were able to tie that in. So sorry for interrupting in there.
Oh, yeah. I guess I inadvertently, yeah. So yeah, so anyway, that's why I'm here to basically volunteer for the Monero Project and help spread awareness of it. I think, you know, with a libertarian conference like this, it's a very receptive message. But you know, the funny thing about Monero is that unique to crypto projects right now, and right now in 2019, we're still in a .com era, right? We're still in an era in which blockchain plus idiotic idea equals cool company. You know, we're still in the pets.com era in which like all these, you know, half-baked ideas still have significant market cap as far as cryptocurrency goes. So because Monero did none of that, we had no ICO, no pre-mine, we don't divert any of the fees that go to the miners to some big pot of money. that we then go, you know, waste on things. This project is run like a charity. It is run on a shoestring budget, almost exclusively on sheer volunteer labor, you know, and these are like idealistic, smart people working on this project. That's one thing I really like about this community, is that it's idealism, right? And we have people who really feel that privacy is a fundamental human right, and we shouldn't be asked to apologize for that. I mean, I think it used to be common sense, right? That people should be entitled to to be left alone and not snooped upon. I'd say, sadly, lately this message is, you know, maybe not so obvious, but, you know, especially as Americans, we need to, you know, basically claim our First Amendment rights, and it doesn't have to be like a big protest or anything violent at all. It can be something as simple as learning about a cryptocurrency project.
And so, I mean, a lot of people, I mean, the knock on Monero would be that it's anonymous, but if you were, let's say, growing up in the 50s, you wouldn't be handing somebody a dollar bill that says, hey, I actually have another $10,000 in this bank account, and people would automatically know that that is not right, and they wouldn't want to sign on to that, but yet somehow in Bitcoin, people have no aversion to that. And the other thing is, when it comes to Bitcoin, and when it comes to cryptocurrencies, and when it comes to digital currencies, already something like, 97% of all the transactions are done digital means anyways. And so we're going to have a digital cashless society in one way or another, whether we try to stop it or not. And it kind of comes down to, do we want a track, traced, and surveilled society where they, like in China, where they can just cut you off? I'm not sure how many hundreds of thousands of people have already been denied the access to travel by plane, by boat, by train, any form of travel, just for dissenting against the government. And that is the obvious path of where I see things going. And one of the reasons I was a little bit slow to kind of catch on to Bitcoin is because I saw Bitcoin as potentially being one of the, almost like a mark of the beast type system, where it's giving the man, giving the government, giving the Federal Reserve exactly what they want. And we did just see the JP Morgan coin coming out the other day. I mean, that's really all you need to know. And so I really do appreciate your time today. And we were just blown away by your presentation. And thank you very much, Dr. Kim.
Thank you.
Thanks. Could I say a word about my consulting business?
Yes.
So yeah, I'm president and CEO and founder of a solo consultancy. It's called Sweetwater Digital Asset Consulting. Sweetwater is the county in Wyoming where I was born. So that's how I named it. And what I'm aiming to do is to help institutional investors, so pension funds, trusts, ultra high net worth individuals, basically people who made legitimate wealth in the traditional non-crypto world, and now they're looking to crypto as a means of diversification for their portfolio, but they're kind of overwhelmed by all the low-quality projects out there, and there's obviously a strong learning curve to this stuff. So that's what I'm kind of offering my services to, is that kind of subset of investors.
And what's one of the best ways for people to find out about Monero, the websites, the wallets you would recommend using, best way people maybe can get a hold of Monero for themselves for the first time?
Sure, so getmonero.org is the official site. So that's important to not mix it up or misspell it or say .com. It's getmonero.org, O-R-G. There's also another community-driven site that's very good for educational purposes. For people to just learn and read more about Monero, it's called monero.how, so .how. And let's see, besides that, people want to kind of reach out to people in the community and meet people. There's a growing number of Monero meetups that are happening around the world. And also Reddit is kind of a central online gathering point, so the Monero subreddit is a good discussion board for that.
So you're saying there's not a Monero Facebook group, I'm guessing. No, that's just a joke. But we really do appreciate his time today, and thank you very much, Dr. Kim.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. One of the ways you can help support the show is by seeing if it makes sense to invest with myself. I'm a certified financial planner with Innovative Advisory Group, LLC. Innovative specializes in self-directed IRAs where you can invest into virtually anything, including virtual assets and cryptocurrencies inside your retirement accounts. And get this, you can actually hold on to the private key. And that's something that nobody else is doing, at least with the help of an advisor. We also run protective growth portfolios where you invest a small amount of your portfolio into put options, and while the rest, and that basically helps protect the rest of the portfolio. Not very many people are familiar with put options, but a lot of people are familiar with homeowners insurance, and it works in a very similar fashion. So essentially what you're doing is using a very, very small percentage of basically, you know, the value of the home to protect the rest of the home. And if the house doesn't burn down or there isn't a major catastrophe, then you're basically out on the cost of the insurance. Flip side on, you know, if your house ends up burning down, well, then you build your house back. And that's really the same thing that's going on here. So if the market ends up tanking and we know the most that you can possibly lose on your investment, and honestly, if the market were to go down 60, 70%, and you're only down single digits potentially, then that's an amazing buying opportunity. Lord Nathan Rothschild said it best, that the best time to invest is when there's blood in the streets. But if your money goes down with everybody else's, then you're not able to take advantage of the next crisis. And also, if you're just camping out in cash or in bonds, making next to nothing, you could be going broke safely for a very long time. And then you've got to know when to time the market. And that's something that basically nobody can do. Now, on the flip side, if I'm wrong in all this and the market keeps going higher, or the Federal Reserve comes out, or the European Central Bank comes out and says, hey, we're going to print a whole bunch more money, and the market goes to infinity, well, then you'll go up to infinity minus the cost of that put option. So I think that this is a great strategy that you definitely want to learn more about. I mean, just given the craziness that's going on right now, I mean, if you're heavy into cash right now, heavy into bonds, or even heavy into stocks, especially if you're close to actually needing those funds for retirement, or just needing those funds in general, maybe for a big project, or maybe you work on a crypto and you raised a whole bunch of money, that this is something that we can help protect yourself and protect your loved ones. And there's nothing you have to lose by scheduling a free consultation with us. And actually, there's a chance you could lose a lot by not talking with us in general. If you go and click on our website in the upper right-hand corner, there's a Work with Tim button up there. You can see all of our plans, ways we work with our clients. Pricing can all be found there. And given that I'm sort of out there on a lot of different political issues, I know that I'm not going to be for everybody. You know, that's sort of my way of qualifying you, not the other way around. But, you know, I'm fine. I'm not trying to have all six billion people out there like me. And I'm here to really, at the end of the day, to tell the truth and to make money, not necessarily make friends. So head over to thelibertyadvisor.com and let's see what we can do for you. Thank you.